You gotta get back to having fun.
Welcome to Made Us. I am your host, Zach Weaver. And guess what, guys? I'm not dead. I'm sorry for leaving you guys as long as I did. As most of you know by now, my health got really out of hand, and it was something I needed to address and deal with on my own. I'll have a full episode releasing about this situation shortly, but I'm ready to get back in the flow of things and start putting out more episodes for you guys. So my guest today is Mr. Cody Railsback. Now that name might sound familiar, because his wife is former guest Nicole Railsback. Cody and I had a great conversation about being resilient and putting in the work to get where you need to be. We also get way off topic, talking about fatherhood, destroying toys, and sports. I really enjoyed today's conversation with Cody, and him and I are truly kindred spirits. So I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. It's been a long time since I've done this. So like always, if you like what you've been hearing, go on Apple Podcasts, leave us a 5-star rate and review, and let us know how we're doing. And make sure you hit that subscribe button. If you hit that subscribe button, you'll never miss an episode of Made Us. And I promise, they're coming back for sure. Also, make sure you share the show with a friend. Sharing the show with a friend really makes this show grow. And if you want to keep up with us on social media, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/MadeUsPodcast or on Instagram and Twitter at MadeUsPodcast. Now, like I said before, this was a super fun conversation with Cody. Him and I are a lot alike, so we enjoyed this one. So with that being said, thank you guys for putting up with me. I promise to tell you guys more about my story soon. But here's my conversation with Cody Railsback. Cody, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Zach.
Hey, I'm glad to have you here. Join some drinks and gonna have a fun conversation, man.
Absolutely.
Dude, so before you got over here tonight, I was mowing my yard. And my yard is slowly becoming like a graveyard for Matchbox cars. I'm sitting here driving the lawnmower, riding lawnmower, and I hear, I'm like, oh shit, what was that? Look, exploded Matchbox car.
Yep.
So the boys are out in the yard. I'm hollering at them to get off the trampoline, pick up the cars. 2 seconds later, there goes another Matchbox car. So my yard is slowly starting to look like that kid from Toy Story, like the original Toy Story, where like there's just destroyed toys, except for it's me hitting shit with lawnmowers.
Yeah, it's been a while since I ran over one, but my kids, they used to leave shit out all the time, and now I'm just yelling at them as I'm mowing. I'm like, come get the shit.
Yeah, I was trying not to hit shit, and I still was hitting it.
Absolutely.
So, Cody, let's tell listeners a little bit about yourself.
I don't know where to begin. I'm an ex-pro baseball player turned car salesman, kind of have it in my blood from my dad, and from Texas originally. Now I'm living up here in Southwest Michigan.
Nice.
Yeah. Got a beautiful bride, Nicole. She's been on your show before.
Yeah. The listeners will know Nicole Railsback. She's been on a couple episodes. She's a fucking feisty one.
That she is. But you know what? I wouldn't have her any other way.
That's awesome, man. So you played pro baseball.
Yeah.
That's fucking awesome, man.
Yeah. It was a wild ride. Played for 8 years and had to end up hanging them up because I got hurt too many times. But
yeah, that happens to a lot of people.
It does.
You know, I never made it that far, but I got hurt a lot.
You know, it's surprising how many people that everybody doesn't know that had more than enough talent in minor leagues and everything, and they just kept getting hurt and kept, you know, just little tweaks and little. And it's like, you know, once you get that designation as injury prone, you're almost blacklisted.
Rough.
Yeah. If you haven't made it prior, they don't want you at that point.
Yeah. That's really rough. It does seem that way. And it, you know, there's so many professional athletes, not that I know what the hell I'm talking about, but just seeing it from the outside, there's so many professional athletes that make it there. And like you said, there's so many guys that could be there that those guys just got a lucky break or just happen to maintain health. Luckily, you know,
right. No, I mean, at a certain level, you know, you've all got the skills.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody is good. Everybody's good enough to play in the bigs. It's, can you do it day in, day out consistently? Can you put in the work? Can you stay healthy? And then at the end of the day, can somebody else like you that matters?
Yeah, that's exactly it. For sure, man. So what system did you play through?
I played with the Atlanta Braves system for 4 years, and then I bounced around a couple of independent ball teams while battling all the injuries.
Okay.
I didn't get hurt really with the Braves. I had a couple of nagging things, but nothing surgically required. And then at my first season away from them, I tore my elbow.
Ouch.
Then I came back, played a full season, and then the next season I tore my hip.
Yeah.
I had to have labrum surgery. Then I was getting ready to go over to Japan, started having some shoulder problems, and the team over there was like, you know, we kind of have like this little scout league up in Canada. And I was like, oh, okay, Canada, you know.
Yeah.
Nicole can, she can go live at home for the summer. She was pregnant with our oldest at the time.
And, yeah, and she's from Michigan, so that's not too bad. Right,
yeah, no, it was easy, and they were talking about, you know, taking trips. I think, I don't know how far Kitchener is. It's over by Toronto.
Okay.
But I think it's like 4-hour drive or something.
Yeah, it's not
like
too bad for me.
They're like, you know, weekend trips or something like that. And I'm like, yeah, you know, come on down. It'll be fun. And then while I was up there, it just got worse and worse and worse, and found out I tore my shoulder.
Jesus, man.
Yeah. And that was all within about 3 years of each other.
Yeah. And what position do you play?
Pitcher.
Yeah. So you're screwed.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty bad.
The shoulder just killed it, because I used to throw mid-90s, and once my shoulder went, I can't even throw 85 anymore.
Yeah. So, so with your elbow, was that the Tommy John?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I came back 9.5 months throwing 92, 93 again, no problem.
So this is just, you know, this is just something I've heard as a sports fanatic, that I've heard like the Tommy John really doesn't affect people like you would think it would. And there's guys that actually, I don't want to say elect to have it, but almost elect to have it.
You know, there's actually a big problem with young kids right now that are electing to have it young, and they don't need it.
Yeah.
And it ends up causing more problems because other things are too weak.
Okay.
And they don't rehab properly. They just think, oh, I'm going to have the surgery and I'm going to throw harder.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, the main reason that guys throw harder is because of the rehab.
Yeah.
And, you know, you think, oh, I had elbow surgery, I'm going to be doing a lot of elbow stuff,
mm-hmm. like
triceps, biceps, kind of working that elbow region. I think I did that the first 2 weeks, and then it was all shoulder.
Oh, really?
It was amazing. Like, I couldn't have anticipated my rehab process being mostly shoulder and back stuff.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't tear my elbow again.
That is weird. I wouldn't have expected that.
Yeah, it's just your shoulders or your elbows are just all about the flexibility once it gets fixed.
Yeah.
But your shoulder is what stabilizes your entire arm. So, you know, it just, it's one of those weird things. You just don't get it. But all these young kids now are trying to do it and trying to have it. And honestly, it's hurting the game. And some people definitely come back throwing harder. But when you throw, I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but when you throw so hard, it's actually hard to just come back and throw that hard again.
Yeah, I can imagine that.
You know, when you're a guy throwing 88 to 90 and you have it, yeah, you're probably going to end up throwing 91 to 93 when you come back.
Yeah.
No doubt. But when you sit 95, 96.
That's smoking, dude.
That's hard to come back to sitting 95, 96 again. Yeah. that's tough in itself.
Dude, that is smoking. So, stupid story, just for you and I here for a second. Took my oldest to the batting cages. Now we both are helping coach baseball. Mm-hmm. We've coached against each other this year, which has been fun. But my oldest, we took him to the batting cages. He's been in a little slump. I do know what I'm talking about. Like, I'm not a total idiot.
Right.
But sometimes you have to show your kids that you're not a total idiot. So I get in the cage trying to show him what I'm talking about.
Right.
And no problem. And then at some point they try to talk me into getting to the fast cage, and which is only 85. Right. Still, 85 is pretty smoking, but it's not 95.
If you haven't seen 85, it is smoking.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't see it on a consistent basis,
yeah, it is smoking.
Yeah.
Get in the cage, and I'll say this first off, I was hitting off of it. I had no problem hitting off of it, but the first pitch, it startled me, because it came in, and I watched it drop in the machine, and then I heard the backstop. You know, right. I was like, what the hell was that?
Yes.
You know, and after that, I was fine. I could hit off of it, which surprised my kids, I think, which was helpful, because now they listen to
now
me
they
a little
really
bit.
Know,
yeah,
you know what you're talking
but
about.
But that first pitch was like, that was faster than I remember. Like,
right. It's that kid street cred.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm not gonna believe you until I actually see it. Type deal.
Yeah, it's been so difficult. He's bad about that. I love the kid to death, but he's been really bad about that. About like, yeah, I don't believe you.
Yeah,
like, I trust me. I know what I'm talking about.
I've been doing it long enough.
Yeah, I'm around it. I know what I'm talking about.
Right.
So that's kind of why I brought you here, was, you know, you have this journey into the big leagues, but it sounds like you had a rough start getting there.
Yeah, it just, ever. I mean, so I started out when I was really little, and I was I was the smallest kid. You wouldn't believe it now because I'm 6'4", 210,
yeah.
You know. But I was the runt of okay. the entire team. I was still fast. I still had a decent arm, but I was a complete runt. I was actually a catcher when I was starting out.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Man, some of those catchers have fucking cannons.
Right. Well, especially whenever you're young, they actually usually have one of the better arms on the team because you're trying to throw everybody, because everybody at that age is stealing.
Stealing, yeah.
Everybody. So you're trying to keep them honest and throw them out. Well, I threw a lot of kids out.
Yeah.
And so I made all-stars all the time. Well, my mom, she played competitive softball and like went to big tournaments and played fast pitch. Nice. And I remember watching her when I was like 5 or 6 years old.
That's
so, I mean,
awesome.
She was still playing when I was a kid. She suggested that I go get pitching lessons
okay.
from this ex-pro. And it was like, yeah, you know, why not? And it was because my arm, I guess, was really long and did 2 or 3 funky movements. And then I would throw.
Okay.
She was like, you could be such a better catcher if you just learned proper throwing kicks.
Yeah. And how old are you at this point?
11.
11? Yep. Okay.
I was 11. And I went and I met with him. And then there was so he used to play with the Red Sox. And then there was another guy there that he was currently with the Seattle Mariners.
Okay.
And his name's Sam Walton. And the other guy's Omar Washington.
Okay.
And Omar and Sam really, really helped me when I was a kid. And Omar has always been there for me.
Yeah.
It just for as long as I can remember, he's been like a second dad to me forever. And Sam, you know, it was awesome seeing him, especially like he was in the Seattle Mariners organization at okay. the time. And so as an 11-year-old kid, you're like, oh my God, this is.
Yeah, that's
like,
awesome.
He is a professional.
So growing up around here, so when I was in high school, we had Matt Manti,
mm-hmm.
played for the Arizona Diamondbacks. He played for the Reds. He played for a couple different teams.
Yep.
But he was on the Diamondbacks when they won the World Series.
Right.
So, and we would run into him places, like out to dinner. And we were, you know, it was like a bunch of high school kids were like, that's Matt Manti.
I know.
Let's go talk to him, yep. you know?
Oh,
so it's
yeah.
cool. It's cool having that around here. You know, and right now, kind of the big deal is Joik Bell.
Yeah.
Plays for the Detroit Lions football team. And he comes back every year and has a football camp.
Right.
So it's cool to have those professional athletes be able to come back and kind of give something back. And it sounds like they really helped you too, which is awesome.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And they, you know, he taught me how to do it. And then he started a select ball team. And it was like, you know, I make all-stars every year. This is kind of, I don't want to say it's too easy, but it's like I wanted to move forward. I wanted that next challenge.
Yeah.
And so I went and I tried out for the team and I made it. And then it was like, oh, I'm on the bench.
Yeah.
That's Why rough. Am I on the bench? And I went and I asked him and it's like, well, you know, you're slower than everybody else. Your arm's not as good. Your fielding's not as good. Your hitting's just not as good. Like you're good enough to be on our team.
Yeah.
But you're a good role player. You're not. And it was like that really hit home. And it was like, man, do I even want to keep playing?
Yeah.
And I asked him the hard question. What do I got to do to get on the field? I love this game too much.
Yeah.
You know, and he said, just get better. Just keep working at it and be ready for your opportunity.
That's awesome though, because that's a lot of it. Not just for baseball, not just for anything, but like having that mentality of like, okay, this sucks, but what do I have to do to take that next step?
Right. And so the biggest thing, I guess, for him was my fielding. I said, if you could pick one area for me to improve in, where would it be? He said, fielding.
Okay.
And I said, okay. So I went home to my mom and I said, Mom, we need to go get a bucket of balls. And I want you to hit me a bucket of balls every single night. If you'll do it.
Yeah.
And she did every night. That woman hit me ground balls in the driveway.
That's
and
awesome.
I started getting skinned up because I started diving on the driveway. Well, the kid that was in front of me, he got hurt. He got popped in the mouth by a ball, had to go get stitches.
Yeah.
I run out there, you know, nervous and excited and everything. Very first ball that gets pitched next gets hit to me.
Oh, geez.
I eat it up right over to first base, no problem. And it was like all the jitters were gone.
Yeah.
And it was like, that was easy.
Yeah.
Like, I can do this. And then the rest, and that was the first game of the tournament. Then I ended up doing really well the whole tournament, hit a triple the first game. And like, but I was ready.
Yeah.
I had worked and worked and worked, and I was just ready. And I think that's the biggest thing is you got to be ready for that opportunity when it comes.
You know,
you're not always going to be the best, but you can be the best prepared that you can.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Being prepared is huge. And I think that's a big thing that I try to tell people, and I try to live myself this way too, is a lot of people like that, like positive self-talk, like to tell yourself like, I can do this. I can do this. I can do anything. I can do, you know, like you said, when you were ready, you're like, oh, when I get to play, I'll do that. I'll be good enough. But to take that realization of like, that positive self-talk only works if you actually put in the work to make it true.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if you don't put in the work to make that true, it doesn't matter how much you tell yourself you're going to be fucking awesome. It's not going to be there because you haven't actually done it.
Right.
But if you've put the work in, then you can use that positive self-talk and tell yourself, like, now's the time. Now's the time to show people I can play.
Absolutely. No, I mean, that's what it's all about in just anywhere.
Yeah.
In anything, you know, whether it's in your career or your family or, you know, whatever, it's just, you got to practice it all the time. Yeah, for sure. And sometimes you're going to struggle. Sometimes that's going to be something that you are horrible at.
Yeah.
But you got to be honest with yourself and say, look, I'm horrible at this. I got to work extra hard at it.
No, absolutely.
And then you'll get better. You know, sometimes when I come home from work, I'm irritated and, you know, everything like that. And my kids don't get the best of me. But you know what? Over the past 5 years, I think I've gotten a lot better about it.
Yeah.
And they're excited when I come home now.
No,
and
that's awesome.
That's important to me.
Yeah.
You know, and it's something, it was a struggle because if I failed at baseball, I carried that, you know, for the next few hours.
Yeah.
It was just something that I carry. And so like, if I have a bad day at work, in the beginning, I would carry it for the next few hours. Now I'm learning to let that go. And
that's a hard thing to do, is to be able to turn that off.
It is.
It really is hard to turn off. For sure. I've been there. Being in my profession, we deal with clientele that sometimes isn't the best clientele in the world. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's really difficult to deal with people. And I've brought that home more times than I like to admit. And it's hard. It is hard to turn that off and kind of be a dad or be a husband, you know, be whatever you need to be, because you're just pissed off about whatever it is. So that's hard. I've been better about that as well lately, about trying to be present, you know, and understand what's going on. Understand that, like, they don't need to deal with this too.
You know? Right. Yep.
No, that's hard.
It is. And you know what? I actually thought that, you know, moving dealerships out to Bridgman and then being in Bridgman, you know, mile and a half away from my work, it would actually be harder. You know, I've only got a mile and a half drive.
That is hard.
That's not a lot of time to let it go, but actually, it's gotten easier.
Oh, really?
I don't know if it's because I have to immediately turn it off.
Yeah.
There's no decompression period.
Okay.
Like, whenever I was over the other plate, it was a little bit longer, but it was almost like it wasn't long enough. It was like I just started to decompress, and then I've got to go, and I didn't get fully through it. Now, I don't have a choice. It's just, bang. Yeah. It's got to get done the second I walk out.
So that's how I was before we moved here, is I had about a 35-minute, 40-minute drive home. And it was a nice time to decompress.
Right.
You know, it was a nice time to kind of zone out and decompress from what was going on. The problem I had is when I did get home, everybody's asleep.
Right.
You know, we work very similar hours. You get off at 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
You have a 45-minute drive home.
Oh, yeah.
You're almost 9 o'clock. We've got little kids. They have school, you know, like that's not, they're not up. So it was hard. But moving here, you know, you have to learn how to reconfigure things. But it definitely, you know. I agree with you. Living here for myself too, it gives me more time to be with my family, which also helps.
Right. No, absolutely. And that, you know, and that's probably part of it too. You know, both of our careers they're very demanding. They're long hours. So you're not around as much, and it's like you miss some stuff.
Yeah.
You're not into the flow. It's almost like you being there messes up the flow, and you hate that feeling.
No, man, I agree wholeheartedly.
And it's like, man, like I'm messing up my own family just by being present. It's like, oh man, this is a terrible feeling. But and I don't think people talk about that enough. Like, especially dads that work long hours.
Yeah.
You know, we're trying to provide for our family, and then it comes home, and we end up messing up the dynamic that they have.
Yeah, because they've built this everyday routine
without you,
without us. Yeah,
and that sucks. And it's like, well, now that I'm here and I'm a lot closer, it's like I'm in that dynamic.
Yeah.
So it's so much easier now. I just slide right in and I'm in it.
Yeah.
And maybe it has to do with them getting a little bit older and me getting a little bit better at leaving stuff at work too, but just everything just seems like it's gotten better since we've gotten out here and changed places, and it just seems to fit better.
Oh, that's awesome, man.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So let's go back for a second. So you know, at the time you take these pitching lessons, you're 11 years old. You're working out as a catcher. You're working out as an infielder. You're kind of going through that. What was the next level of that?
Well, so I ended up playing second base for the next 2 years.
Okay.
While still taking pitching lessons.
Yeah.
I fell in love with pitching.
So here's a quick one for you. This is real stupid. When I played second base, I was a terrible fielder. That's why they put me at second base. I could hit and I could run. I had wheels. That was my thing. I was fast.
Yeah.
Lead off. That was my whole point. Get on base, steal base. That was my game. That's all I had at the time. But my nickname was E4. And if those that don't know baseball, that's what an error is for the second baseman is E4. So that was my nickname was E4. They would literally call me E4.
Oh,
all right, go ahead. Sorry.
No,
you're good.
No, so I played second base while still taking pitching lessons. And, I mean, I fell in love with pitching, and I bugged my coach all the time. Like, when can I get in the game? When can I get in? He, for 2 years, this is the same guy that was like second dad to me.
Yeah.
He was like, you're not ready. You're not ready. And I was like, but I pitched the year before in my rec league, and I've gotten better, and you're still telling me I'm not ready.
Yeah.
And that was frustrating. And after that, so he didn't let me get on the mound until I was 15.
Oh, wow.
He just flat out didn't let me. He didn't teach me a curveball until I was 15. And then that was one of the pitches that I got drafted off of. Yeah. It was my curveball. It was just like, you don't need to throw those kind of pitches whenever you're that young.
Yeah.
You just don't.
I'm curious about that because I've seen that, you know, young kids throwing breaking balls.
Oh, my God.
You're kind of like, I don't know how I feel about kids throwing breaking balls like that.
You actually put more stress on your elbow throwing breaking balls than you do throwing a fastball.
Yeah.
You can throw a 90-mile-an-hour fastball, and it's less stress than a 78-mile-an-hour curveball.
Yeah.
And it's just because of the way that your arm is torqued.
Yeah, you're just putting a lot of torque on it, right?
Right.
Yeah.
It's all that torque, and the harder you throw it, the more rotation, the bigger the break. So, you know, when you're a kid, it's, how big can I make this break?
Yeah.
You know, it's cool. And so they abuse it, and they develop bad mechanics trying to get it to break big.
Yeah.
It's not about the sharpness of it, which when you get older, you understand sharpness misses the bat.
Yeah.
Big usually ends up to big home runs because it's just floating in there.
Yeah.
And those good hitters will see it and just pop, see ya.
That's crazy.
But also, you know, I kept doing that, and then he had me play third base because by that time, it was more valuable to have me in the lineup as a fielder.
Okay.
Like I wasn't that great of a hitter ever.
Yeah.
I was never a power guy. Just strictly singles, doubles, and you know, good situational hitter. I'd get the pop up to get the run in. I'd be able to bunt, get the guys over, things like that. I mean, just good baseball hitting, but I'd never hit over 300.
Okay.
Ever.
Yeah.
I wasn't that guy. But I had a really good arm, and then by that time I had shot up. And so he put me at third base because I was, you know, I mean, I was 6'3 at the time.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
I mean, so I shot up over the last 2 years and, you know, my arm got a lot stronger. I could make the throw. And then I was pitching. And then the next year it was like, oh, we don't have a first baseman. It was like, well, you know what? I'll figure out how to do that too. We had a third baseman. It's like, oh, yeah, I'll go get a glove. So then I played there. And then the next season I was pitching and then literally playing wherever somebody was absent.
Yeah.
It was like, I didn't have a position. I could just kind of play anywhere. So I carried all these gloves with me all the time. And then my last year, it was nice. Like we had everybody playing somebody somewhere and I was pretty much just a pitcher. I still filled in every now and then, but I was pretty much just a pitcher on the team. And then I went to college as a pitcher only. And then after that ended up signing with the Braves and started getting hurt.
So you said your big pitch was a breaking ball, though.
Yeah. So that, I mean, because in high school, I topped out at 90.
Okay.
91 and stuff like that. But I could, you know, I threw a lot of strikes.
Yeah.
And I had this big breaking ball, and it was sharp. I still remember this. I was throwing for this scout, and he's just an old school guy, and it was hilarious. He goes, let me see your curveball. And so I threw it. And he goes, oh, my God, that's an MC Hammer. And he starts doing the MC Hammer dance and goes, can't touch this. And he's doing it on the mound next to me. I'm like, really? Like, I can't throw with this going on. I'm dying laughing.
Yeah.
Omar's dying laughing.
Oh, that's
it was
too good.
Hilarious. It was a Dodger scout. I don't remember his name or anything, but I remember that so vividly.
That's so awesome.
Oh, my God. It was hilarious.
Oh, God, that's funny.
And then actually, you know what? Whenever I went to college, so that was actually, I think it was a year removed from high school at that point. But my freshman year of college, my curveball actually got scrabbed.
Really?
My pitching coach didn't like it. So he taught me a slider. And that was actually my out pitch for the longest time. I still had my curveball. I still played with it.
Yeah.
And then whenever I got to the Braves, they hated my slider.
Oh, jeez.
And they said, anytime you throw a slider, I'm going to fine you $50. Oh, you're man. Throwing a curveball. You're going to figure it out again.
Yeah.
And I did figure it out again, but it was like $50 anytime I throw a slider. Dang. Like I got fined $50 day one for not being clean shaven.
Wow.
But nobody told me I needed to be clean shaven.
Yeah.
Like that wasn't in the contract. It wasn't anything. And I didn't even, it was clean cut. It wasn't like I came in scraggly. I didn't yeah. look like one of the Robertsons.
You know,
but.
You know, you say that, and I didn't know this. As most of my listeners know, and as you know, I shoot competitively.
Mm-hmm.
I shoot technically, professionally. And I didn't realize some of that's contract based too. Is I've been very fortunate. Companies that look at me sign me for the reason. You know, I'm heavily tattooed. I got a beard. You know, whatever.
Right.
I'm okay in most books, but there's a few companies that really have a certain look, and I didn't realize this until I got more into the business end of it. Is I've had friends get signed by companies that had, you know, shoulder length hair, that had to cut their hair, shave their beard. You know, and I never would have thought. You know, yeah. I just thought, oh, we're going to shoot for this company. It's not a big deal, but to actually have to change your appearance or whatever it is. And I never thought about that with big league players, but
The Yankees are they're the only organization I think still that requires their guys to be clean shaven.
Yeah.
The whole way up.
Yeah.
The Braves, I don't know if they changed it since I left or not, but whenever I had to be there, if you were in the minor league, if you weren't on the 40-man roster,
yeah.
you had to be clean shaven. You couldn't show any tattoos.
Really?
So like there were a couple guys that I played with that were sleeved up.
Yeah.
They had to wear long sleeves to not show any tattoos the entire time. Yeah.
That's funny.
So they're out there, you know, I mean, we're playing in places like Virginia where it's humid and 100 degrees. And
yeah.
Rome, Georgia, where it's 104 and humid as heck.
Ouch.
And they're out there, all they got these long sleeves on.
Yeah. I remember, this is obviously stupid, but if you don't know already, I'm a huge sports fanatic. I've been my entire life. So yeah, you talk about the Yankees having that policy of being clean shaven. I remember when Johnny Damon went.
Yes.
And that was a big deal because he played for the Red Sox and they were the idiots. And they had, you know, he had this huge, they called him Jesus, you know what I mean? Because
right.
he had this huge Jesus beard. And then he signed with the Yankees.
And then he had
Yankees.
The hair too.
Yeah, and he had the hair. And then he signed with the Yankees and had to cut his hair and shave his beard.
Right.
Not only that he went from the Red Sox to the Yankees, which was a big enough thing, but like then he had this huge drastic appearance change too.
Yep. Nobody hardly recognized him.
Yeah.
A little bit. They're like, wait a second, that's Johnny Damon.
Did you hear about David Ortiz getting shot? Speaking of the idiots.
Oh my God, I did. You know, so I'm a part of this ex-minor league and current minor league baseball group on Facebook.
Okay.
There's, I think, like 20,000 of us like that. Yeah, it's a huge network, and it's really cool. We can get in there and talk about the good old days and stuff like that. But that was the first place that I heard about it. They posted on Facebook. They're like, David Ortiz just got shot. And I'm like, whoa.
Yeah,
like, is
crazy.
He all right? And they're like, yeah, no, they say he's good. They say he's still. And it's like before ESPN or anything, like, even breaks it.
Oh,
like,
wow, that was early then.
Yeah. I mean, like,
I saw it on ESPN, but, man, ESPN showed the footage, like the security footage.
Oh, wow.
Up to the point, like, you could see the gun fire.
Wow.
Like it was, they pause it right there, but you can see like the discharge of the firearm.
Wow.
I was pretty surprised that they showed it that far.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Especially with ESPN, they usually try to be a little bit more careful with that kind of stuff. But one thing that was really cool about the Red Sox that I heard, I don't know if it's 100% true or not. I just heard it once, but I heard that they sent a plane down to go get him and fly him up to Boston.
I could believe that.
Yeah.
I could believe that.
I mean, that's first class for like a guy that was a career Red Sox guy and, you know, finished his career there, didn't try to leave for extra money or anything. And that's first class.
I could believe that.
Yeah.
I've seen them. I've seen a lot of organizations. I don't want to just pretend like it's just them, but they seem like they really take care of their players. I could be totally wrong.
There's definitely organizations that do, and especially if you are a career guy with them.
Yeah.
They're going to go above and beyond for you being a career guy. They may not. You know, whenever you're getting late in their career, they may ask you to take a hometown discount.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's part of the relationship that you have. You want to be there.
Yeah.
You know, why not? You're making millions, man. Like,
that's
one thing that I've always said, that if I made it, it would not strictly be, I mean, don't get me wrong, money's important. I would want to get everything that I can
because
you only get to play for so long. And I know that's a big part of it, but I might take a little bit less to go to a contender.
Yeah.
But that was me. I wanted to win.
Yeah.
I didn't like, I don't know who's a team that's kind of irrelevant right now. The Miami Marlins.
Yeah.
if they were the top bidder, I probably wouldn't go.
Yeah.
I would go somewhere else because I want to try to win a championship.
Makes sense.
I mean, that's great. You know, I go there and I get paid and everything, but where's my name in the record books?
Yeah.
I want to be remembered for winning. I don't like Matt Banti. Yeah. You know, I mean, he was there. You know, Jason Hayward, he's with the Cubs, and that was really cool. Like, I got to play rookie ball with him, and now he's got a World Series ring. Like, yeah, I'm so happy for him. Jason is one of the best human beings.
Is he really?
That I've ever been around. Oh, my God. He's an awesome, awesome dude. When he got hit in the face, I was heartbroken for him. And the way he's come back has been awesome. You know, but I wouldn't expect anything less from Jason. That's just the kind of person he is.
He was a big time role player in that World Series too.
Oh yeah.
Which was cool to see him kind of, you know, when he before he came to the Cubs, he was definitely like a star.
Yeah.
And then when he got to the Cubs, he kind of took that back seat, which is really, I mean, I don't want to say that's what that team had a lot special going on for them.
They did.
And that was probably, I'm a White Sox fan. I grew up a White Sox fan. I've never been a Cubs hater, but I've always kind of like enjoyed like the misery, you know?
Right.
But that was, I think that season was the first time that I was like, I hope they do win.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
it was special. Yeah, you could just see there was something different. It was something special.
Absolutely.
It was a group of guys. They got along. They had that camaraderie and they were brothers.
Yeah.
And you could tell like,
they just meshed. I love seeing that. I remember like when we were talking about the Red Sox or the idiots.
Yeah.
Like when they won, that was a fun team to watch.
Yeah.
Or like the year after that, the White Sox won.
Right.
And that team had, they went out singing Journey every night in bars.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like I love seeing that, like that thing, you know what I mean? Like it's cool to see teams win, you know, the Yankees come in and win, but nothing against the Yankees, but it's like, okay, they won. But then you see these teams that just have that like thing that like holds them together and I can get behind that.
So there is one team that I've been a part of that was like that. And it was in Shreveport. We won the championship. That it was actually the year I tore my elbow, so I was only with them for half the season.
Okay.
But that team just, it was so much fun.
Yeah.
And I loved all the guys that I played with. There was one guy that I disliked on the team. And that's tough. You got 25 guys on the team. Like, you're bound to not like somebody.
And a bunch of alpha males.
Right.
Typically.
Right. Typically. And man, we all just got a lot. And we had these certain songs, like they would do Journey. Like there were these certain songs they'd come on in the locker room, like right before the game started. And it got us all hyped. And we're just being a bunch of idiots jumping around the locker room.
That's
and
awesome.
Then, you know, and those home games were great. And then the road trips were great. And I remember we lost 3 games in a row one time. It was the only time all season that we lost 3 in a row. And after the third loss, our coach, we call him Skip, he made us have a mandatory bar night. He made us go out to the bar. And then there were some, we were in Pensacola, Florida, and there were some loudmouth locals that were there. And we ended up getting into a bar fight with
them. Oh, no.
But it brought us even closer together.
Yeah.
Like nobody backed down, nobody hid, nobody ran. Everybody had each other's back.
That's
and
awesome.
Like that was the way that team was from day one. It was something just different about it.
Yeah,
it was.
And it's cool to see that like special thing.
Yeah. And then, you know, I mean, I would say the only other time that I've ever really had that, like with a team like that, not select ball, obviously, because we grew up playing together.
Yeah.
You know, but, was my freshman year of college. We had that same thing. We were just crazy and, you know, we all got along.
Yeah.
And that was awesome. The cool part.
That's really good.
We went to regionals for like the first time in 30 years or something like that for my school. So, I mean, that was cool. It's like when you see those special things happen and they click like that.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to end up winning ball games.
Yeah, for sure.
But they've got to click first. And that's.
You always tell kids, and I tell kids as a coach, to go out and have fun. And it's a very overrated thing to say or underrated thing to say. I don't know which way it is, but it's a very.
It's cliche, but it's very so cliche. True.
But when the kids actually have fun, it makes a difference.
It does.
It really makes a huge difference when they can go out and have fun.
Yeah.
Those kids are going to win a ball game.
Absolutely.
But when you're just telling them to have fun and they're out there and they're stressed, like it's not the same. But when you can actually see them having fun.
Right.
Man, we played. So I'm coaching 8U Little League.
Right.
And we played a game the other night and those kids were having fun.
Right.
And we lost.
And you can tell.
We did lose the game. But I mean, those kids had fun and it was a slugfest. We lost like 14-13.
Oh,
you know what I mean? Like
heartbreaker.
But those kids were having fun. And that's that didn't matter if we won the game.
Right.
And I don't want to say it was the first game all season we've had fun, but it's definitely one of the first games where you're like, I don't want this game to end because right. these kids are having too much
there was
fun.
Something different
yeah.
in that one game.
Yep,
yeah, no, I totally get it. And what, I mean, so coaching T-ball, the first thing that I say is I tell everybody great job, and I said, who had fun today?
Yep.
You know, that's the biggest thing. You have to have fun. It's a game.
Yep.
And I feel like it's getting so lost with all these travel ball teams and everything like that, and it's like, you got to get back to having fun.
Yep.
It's a game. Sure. Do you want to be the next, I don't know, Derek Jeter? You want to be the next Mariano Rivera, yeah. the next Albert Pujols? Sure. Absolutely. Everybody does. Everybody. But you got to have fun. You think those guys didn't have fun?
Oh, yeah.
They were having a freaking blast.
Maybe not Albert Pujols. I don't know. He didn't seem like he had fun.
He's a machine.
I don't think that guy's ever had fun.
I'm not sure I've ever seen him smile.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, it does make a big difference when they're out there having fun. It makes a big difference.
Yeah, they're loose. They play yeah. better, and you know they have confidence when they're having fun.
Yeah.
Once you start having fun doing it, you start building more confidence.
And absolutely.
And then you start taking more chances, and the more chances that work out, the more confidence that you get, and then you can continue, and then that love for the game grows.
Yeah.
And that's in anything, not just in baseball, but that's in any sport, that's in any field. You know, I mean, take science, you know, you take a chance on something and it works and you do it good. And it's like, wow, okay, I want to take the next step. Like,
yeah, what's next?
Right. Like, how can I keep going with this? How can I make a career out of it?
Yeah.
You know, doing something that I love to do. And absolutely. That's ultimately, you know, the goal.
No, absolutely, man. You know, and this is getting a little too on myself here is I did that recently. Again, you know, I talked about before about being a competitive shooter.
Yeah.
I've shot my ass off the last 4 years. This is probably my fifth season as quote unquote professional shooter. I've shot my ass off. And at the end of last season, I was really burnt out.
Right.
I mean, I was really burnt out. I was disgusted with some of the things that have been happening. I wasn't happy with my performance. And I really took most of the off season off, which is the first year I've actually taken an off season. Most of the time during the off season, I'm in the basement. I mean, immediately working on things, doing whatever. And I was so disgusted. And I took the off season off. I coached hockey. I coached all-star hockey after that and just enjoyed myself.
Right.
In this season, I've gone back with a little bit different mindset and I have shot the best I've ever shot in my life. And it's not, you know, granted, I do have experience to build off of. It's not like all of a sudden it's my first year shooting.
Right.
I do have 4 years of full experience behind me, but the mindset has changed. And I've shot the best I've ever shot in my life
right.
recently. And I think it's getting back to that about just like enjoying what you're doing and taking that and having fun again. Because for a long time, it became a second job for me. You know, even though it was a hobby and I did start getting paid to do it, which was cool. Then it becomes, you have that obligation of like trying to do good
right.
and trying to represent your sponsors and these people that are paying you.
Right.
And it gets so overwhelming that I didn't know what to do anymore.
Right.
And I literally dropped almost all my sponsors. I have 3 major sponsors left. I went down from like 10 sponsors to 3. And these are companies that I believed in all the companies I was sponsored by, but these are companies that like I know will support me regardless of what happens.
Right. It's not just strictly what have you done for me lately?
Yes. These companies will support me regardless.
Right.
And I'm back to having priceless. Fun. And it's changed. I mean, it's changed my outlook on a lot of things.
Yeah, you got to have fun. And you know, another thing from coaching and doing everything this year, it's inspired me to actually go out on a venture. Nicole's doing it with me and everything, but we're actually opening up a place.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we're going to open it up. We're hoping to be running by August 1st.
Nice. What's it going to be?
But it's called the Railsback Indoor Sports Expo.
I like this.
It's long. We shortened it. The Rise.
I like it.
Yep.
Yeah, like it a lot.
We're going to have baseball, hopefully some soccer, hopefully some basketball. You know, I mean, we're not going to limit it to just baseball because
okay.
everybody needs somewhere to go practice when it rains up here.
Yeah.
And when it's snowy.
Yeah. And that happens here.
It's snowy 6 months out of the year yeah. up here. You know, I'm from Texas. I'm not used to that.
Yeah.
I'm getting used to it, but you know, it's something that I realized there's not a lot of that type of stuff around here. And
there's
it's
like, really not,
you know, and helping these kids this year, just have fun with baseball
yeah.
and stuff. It's like, you know, I want to help kids. I want to help them better their careers. You know, if I can help one kid get college paid for.
Yeah.
It's worth it.
Absolutely.
You know, especially with student loan debt and everything nowadays. I mean, ultimately, the end goal, obviously, hey, go to the big leagues.
Yeah.
But, you know, if I can help you get a partial scholarship some way, somehow, you know, whatever the case may be, like, yeah, you know, and get in touch with some of these local colleges, get in touch. And, you know, if this kid is having trouble getting looked at, like, I want to be able to help him out. I want to be able to put his videos out there and get seen by people and hopefully get him picked up some way.
That's awesome.
Yeah, hopefully we'll be up and running soon, and I'll be doing most of the baseball stuff, but, you know, Nicole, she's going to be doing her thing too, and okay. None of us are quitting anything. This is going to be something that we do on the side, so, yeah.
That should be awesome.
A lot of fun. I'm excited for it.
No, I'm excited for you guys. That sounds awesome. This is news to me, and I'm really stoked for it already. I'm really stoked for it.
Yeah, I debated telling you beforehand, but I figured, you know, it might be a little bit better.
No, that's surprise. Fucking awesome, man. I'm stoked for you. And if I can do anything to help, let me know, because I'm all about that. I think that's awesome. I would have loved, I say loved, I'd have killed to have something like that.
Right.
I mean, well, to be able to do things all year round. You know, I played sports growing up. I played everything. I played baseball. I played basketball. I played football. It did everything. Everything we could do, we did.
Right.
But like you said, during the winter, we don't measure snow in inches here. We measure snow in feet. You know?
Oh, the dang lake effect. I know. It's whenever I moved up here, so I sold cars in Texas before I moved up here, and it's like, man, this is got to be the worst place to sell cars, you know? During the summertime, you're helping family move a minivan's worth of stuff over to their new car.
Yeah.
You're wearing a tie. You're wearing long. It's like, God, this is so hot. Moving up here, it's like, I gotta go broom cars. I gotta go broom a foot of snow off the trucks. And because I'm the tallest, guess who gets stuck with all the trucks?
Makes sense.
I'm up there, my hands are over my head, and I ended up buying some bibs because I got tired of my pants getting soaked. It's like, I've got bibs on. I look like I'm about to go snowboarding.
That's awesome. Oh man, that's really funny.
Yeah, no, we're gonna open that, and Nicole's been great. She's been super supportive, and you know, I couldn't ask for a better partner in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's awesome. She kicks some serious ass, man.
She does, in her classes and in life. I mean, just everywhere. And she's been through hell and back too. But y'all already know that.
Yep. All the listeners, if you haven't heard the story already, go find Nicole Rasbach's first episode. She's been on twice. Go back, find her first episode.
I think it was episode 5.
I think it is episode 5.
Yeah.
And listen to her story. She really has been to hell and back, and she's a fighter. And as she said in her episode, and I remember this, is I think I called her, well, I don't know if I would call her a victim or something like that, but she said, I'm not a victim.
Right.
Like, I'm a survivor. I'm ready to go. You know, like.
Right.
She's a fucking warrior, and it's crazy, man.
She is. Yeah. No, it's awesome. And you can tell that if you get to see her every day and stuff, you know that's what kind of person she is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she's an amazing human.
Yeah, she's craziness.
Yeah.
And she kicks your ass too, I'm sure.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. Oh, and she's made me just a completely better human being.
Yeah.
I mean, part of what's made me is her.
That's like, awesome.
She always calls me an asshole whenever we met, and you know, I probably was a little bit, you know, and she's definitely softened me up, and but also kept me hard at the same time. Yeah. Like, in the places where I need to be still hard and still, yeah, I mean, I know it's taboo to say being a man nowadays, but
yeah,
men are supposed to be men. You're supposed to take care of your family.
No, I agree. And so I'll say this, and I don't care if I take flack for it, but I feel like we're about the same age. And we come from like that last generation of like men, you know what I mean? And I'm not trying to dog anybody.
No, you're definitely not trying to take anything away from anybody else, but I definitely understand what you're saying. It's like this, now there is like a certain level of masculinity where you're out doing stupid crap all the time.
Yeah.
Like, okay, dude, tone it down. We get it. Like, you have an overflow of testosterone. It's fine. But those providers, those the guys that will go out and do whatever it takes to take care of their family.
Yeah.
I just feel like it's starting to go away. And it's like, you know, we're raised by a different generation.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest thing, is we were just raised by a different generation and didn't have technology at our fingertips.
Absolutely.
And that's a big, I mean, I was outside playing. My parents had to jerk me inside.
No.
I mean, my dad, he's he's 71, 72.
Okay.
So, I mean, he's part of the older baby boomers.
Yeah.
That was who I got raised by. You know, I mean, and that man has an insane work ethic.
Yeah. So my dad's a little younger than that. My dad's probably on the younger end of the baby boomers, but still, like, that's like, go outside, do something.
Right.
Do something, go play, do whatever.
And don't expect the world to do anything for you.
And I grew up very split. My parents are divorced. My dad lived in the country. So I got that very country life, had chickens and everything else.
Yep.
Lived on 25 acres. My mom lived in the city, so I kind of had that city boy thing. But like, they were both like, go outside, go do something. You know, and this is a pretty cool memory and something that couldn't be done today. But I grew up on 25 acres. My dad would go take the truck and drive around the field. Literally, like 12 years old, driving the truck around the field.
Right.
Shit, you know, you couldn't do nowadays, let alone like trying to get your kids off a tablet or a phone.
Yeah.
You know, like, they didn't know what the hell outside looks like.
No. Heck, I remember we went to Cedar Creek Lake. That's this nice lake. Some people have lake houses. Well, I don't even remember if it was just my dad's or if it was him and his business partners or whatever. But there was always people at that lake. I remember riding in the back of a truck on the way down there.
Yeah.
And my dad telling me, get your fingers out of there. They're going to get squished. Yeah. And sure enough, they did once or twice on the way down. And it's like, well, you learn.
Yep.
But I mean, it was like 2 hours from where we lived. And me and my cousin rode in the back of a truck. I was probably 10 or 11 years old.
Yeah.
And nowadays they take you to jail.
Oh, yeah. If you put your kids in the back of the truck. I had my kids ride in the back of the truck today at the range. I had to go work at the range for a little bit.
Yeah.
And literally just driving around the range, and they thought it was the coolest thing. And I'm like, shit, we did that all the time. Like you said, we went places like that, not just like
down the
driveway.
That was transportation.
Yeah.
I remember, I even remember sitting in the front seat, just in a booster seat.
Yeah.
And it's like, now if you were to do that, it's like, oh, and I think I was 5 or 6 years old.
Yeah.
You know, couldn't have weighed 50 pounds sopping wet, and I was in the front
seat. I legitimately had a friend, and this is no joke. I had a friend whose parents only had a pickup truck, and they had a cab on their pickup truck, on the bed of the truck. So it was enclosed, and they had two couches in the back. And that's, if they took us somewhere, that's where we rode. We sat in the back. They had couches. That was nice for us. But I mean, it was kind of funny because it was like literally like you got in the back and sat on the couch, and they'd take us to the fair.
No seatbelts or anything.
Yeah, wherever.
We went.
That's how we went around.
You made do with what you had.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just come from a different generation for sure.
Yeah. But, and it's not taking anything away from this generation. You know, I mean, they have their own challenges and everything too. You know, they've got to wear a 20-pound helmet on their head, you know, while they're riding their bike.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, it just.
The problem I have with the newer generation. And I'm going to piss off some listeners because I have some newer generation listening to me, is they seem to have excuses for everything. It's somebody else's fault for everything.
Yeah.
It drives me nuts that I'm like, it's not someone else's fault. I'm not saying things happen and it couldn't be someone else's fault for something, but not everything is someone else's fault.
Right.
You put yourself in that position.
Or, you know, one of my biggest things is it seems like they have to find something to put a fault too.
Yeah.
When something goes wrong, it's not just okay, this happened, how do we fix it? Let's move on.
Yeah.
It's no, we have to put a fault in here, and then we need to fix the fault before we go and fix the problem. And it's like, just go fix the problem. There's a problem, just go fix it.
Yeah.
Like I don't understand why the need to have this big song and dance about something that happened. Okay, it happened. Let's move on. Let's fix the problem, and then we can get on with our day and start being more productive again.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, it just
absolutely. I've seen it personally too close lately. I won't mention any names, but it's happened too close to me lately with people I know that, like you said, they're just like, they're making excuses about things. And you're like, you're not trying.
Right.
You're making excuses. You're fighting this. You're not trying to come up with a solution.
Right.
You just want to play the blame game instead of trying to fix the problem, like you just said.
Yep.
It's really bothersome. It
is. Luckily, everybody that I work with, you know, I think the youngest guy that I work with is 47.
Yeah.
So there, it's okay. No big deal. Mistake happened. Let's go.
Yeah.
How do we fix
Move
it?
On. Yep.
How do we fix it? Well, I don't really care whose fault it is. How do we fix the problem? it's his fault. Great. I don't care. The problem still isn't fixed. Let's go.
Absolutely. Well, Cody, it's been a ton of fun tonight.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to having you back. But the way I close every show is I ask for a piece of advice. So if you had one piece of advice to give somebody growing up, struggling, what would it be?
Just don't quit. Find a way to put yourself in a better situation and work really, really, really hard on it. You got to put everything that you have into it. Just like with me, and it's something that I always come to, my mom hitting me baseballs. It was something that we did every night for at least 2 hours a night. Yeah. And it was, I didn't go inside and watch TV. I didn't even go inside and do my homework. I do homework afterwards. But yeah, that was the one thing that I knew was going to make me better. So it's find that one thing that's going to make you better and be in a, and put you in a position to succeed, and do it relentlessly. You know, if you have to go away, get off the grid for a little while. You may not have friends for a little while, and it's okay, because when you come back into the world, people aren't going to recognize you, and that could be a very good thing.
A very good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's huge. And the one thing I see out of that, and not necessarily that you had a failure, I wouldn't say that you had a failure, but I think that being relentless comes from not succeeding.
Absolutely.
So you had that moment of, wow, I'm not as good as I thought I was. I'm better than all these kids, but I'm not. I'm the bottom rung of these good kids.
Right. So I slipped.
I
didn't fail on my way out of the mountain. I slipped.
Yeah.
And I had to work harder to get past that spot where I kept slipping.
So you need to stay resilient.
Yeah.
And put that fight out.
Yep.
That's an awesome way to end it. I appreciate having you, buddy.
And I appreciate you having me.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.